So you're getting older and things are starting to change with your body, your skin. Oh, let's face it, everything. Well, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Anti-Aging Uncensored, the show for driven women who want real solutions to defy their age. I'm your host, Jill Gilbert, digital health leader and entrepreneur. I'm a self-proclaimed product junkie as well as an overly obsessed fan of anti-aging breakthroughs and cutting-edge health solutions. And I'm going to help you tackle the challenging and oh-so-extraordinary next years of your lives. Now let's dive into the latest episode of Anti-Aging Uncensored. There is no denying in the past year that we've been living in extraordinary times. The impact the pandemic has had on mental health, wellness, and so much more is immense. Our guest today is here to help us understand how we can manage stress, anxiety, and depression, whether we're in the middle of a crisis or just experiencing normal life stuff. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Erin Joyce. She is a licensed clinical psychologist in private practice in Los Angeles. Dr. Joyce is laser focused on helping women who are struggling with anxiety, depression, trauma, and life transitions. Today, she's here to help us navigate through the mental health impacts we're feeling from the pandemic and how we can use these strategies moving forward. Let's dive in and start finding the real answers we need to get back to ourselves again. Welcome, Dr. Erin Joyce, to Anti-Aging Uncensored. I am so happy that you're here with us today.
Thank you so much, Jill. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, this is a very timely topic. It's been timely for all of 2020 and now for 2021. Mm-hmm. And I think that since the pandemic, I've seen, you know, statistics report that 4 in 10, I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than that, are feeling some kind of anxiety or depression. Does this align with what you've been seeing?
Yes, absolutely. This is obviously a huge, huge stressor, and it's affecting kind of, the trickle-down effects are many. And so, there's the anxiety about, one's health and loved one's health. And then there's also just all of the changes with work and family, with, if you have children, with school, there's so much. It really has, affected every aspect of life.
Yes. And so why don't you give the listeners a background on yourself? So as we dive into the next thing, they can sort of understand the context of where you are and how you're helping people.
Yes. Okay. So I am a licensed clinical psychologist in private practice in the Los Angeles area. And I work with adults, with both individuals and with couples as well. And mostly I see individuals that are dealing with stress and anxiety and depression and trauma, relationship issues, adjusting to major, life transitions and loss. So,
so you've been busy. Yeah.
Yes. I've definitely been busy. Yes.
So, yes. I think it would be really helpful we start to throw words together. We say depression and anxiety and stress. And so I'd love if we could just spend a moment talking about sort of, for lack of a better word, the definition of anxiety and stress, what the differences are, what's happening to our bodies, things like that. So if we sort of separate those out.
Yeah. So, and there can be overlap for sure with anxiety and stress. Anxiety, it's definitely a feeling that is, can be both physical, physiological, and also there's that, mental part of it, or there's that emotional part of it, which is, just feeling, uneasy and nervous. So, kind of physiologically, there's, a host of different symptoms, kind of butterflies in the stomach, heart palpitations, kind of quicker breathing, sweating,
all those things.
Also just the feeling of, something is wrong, and
gloom and doom.
Yeah, gloom and doom. And also, you know, there's, it's really this anticipation of like something bad is going to happen, or like some sort of like worrying about something, you know, in the future, some sort of future threat. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's really hard to feel.
And on our earlier discussion that we had offline, you talked about it being there's a benefit to our anxiety.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's what we're, you know, kind of from a, you know, evolutionary perspective, we're it's like it helps us survive and keeps us safe. We have this kind of built-in like alarm system, you know, so to speak, that when there's, you know, when there's potential danger around us, we, you know, kind of, you know, aren't activate and the fight or flight response is triggered. And so, we're able to avoid, you know, certain, you know, potential danger. It also can motivate us too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It can motivate us, you know, having that anxiety of, you know, like before, like a, you know, a test or something, or like a big, you know, like a job presentation. If we have a little bit of like, you know, thinking ahead and, you know, really thinking about, okay, how's this going to go? And maybe worrying about, you know, how am I going to do that? That helps motivate us to prepare. And,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are some benefits to our anxiety, ladies. And so I've always thought that sort of stress leads to some anxiety. Is that, or is it, is stress such a bad thing?
Right. I mean, I think it's actually kind of similar to, you know, anxiety. Having a little bit of stress, I think, is really normal. And it also can, you know, again, I think kind of, you know, motivate us and keep us going. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's just kind of an inevitable part of life.
Right.
You know, anything new that happens, you know, is technically, even if it's a positive thing, is considered a stressor because we have to adapt.
Right.
So, you know, but the problem is when stress gets too, you know, to be too much, you know, there are too many, it's just too much for us to handle. And then that can, you know, that's when it can create anxiety and begin to affect our mood. And we feel, you know, some like symptoms of depression and overwhelm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to depression, which is a category that I know has many levels to it. Mm-hmm. And people have developed depression over this time that it isn't something maybe they're born with. Maybe you can do a little definition of it and help us sort of understand the varying degrees.
Yes. So there are kind of two like cardinal symptoms that define, you know, true depression. And it's a, you know, it's a change in mood, like depressed mood, sad mood. And then there's also kind of a loss of interest in things that we normally enjoy doing. And that's called anhedonia. So we just, you know, aren't excited or aren't interested in doing the things that we used to do. So if, you know, if one of those are present along with, you know, some other symptoms, that's typically a sign that, you know, depression is happening. And, you know, some of the other symptoms are, you know, changes in eating, like either increased appetite or decreased appetite, changes in sleep, you know, sleeping less or sleeping more, change in energy level, typically lower energy level, you know, feeling kind of slowed down or kind of keyed up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in more extreme cases, you know, thoughts of not wanting to be here anymore, you know, thoughts of, you know, suicide and death. And so that obviously is when it, you know, treatment becomes really, yes. And so, you know, within this kind of, with these symptoms, you know, what we look at, you know, as far as severity of depression to define that, it's, you know, how many symptoms are there and also how much are they kind of persisting? Like, are they, you know, are they really persistent and not really going away?
Or is this just, you know, a immediate reaction to something, like something more temporary?
Yes. Right. And it passes. And also we want to look at like, how much are these symptoms interfering with like functioning? Like, does it make it hard to, obviously, if you, you know, hard to get out of bed and go to work, or, you know, or go online to work, or, yeah, you know, or kind of take care of the daily responsibilities. That's really important to look at.
Because depression can be debilitating.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
And there's no, I remember myself trying to explain it to someone because it's something that I've dealt with. Mm-hmm. And I described it as like, so they could understand that it wasn't a snap out of it. Like, why can't you go run around the block and feel better? Why can't you go, you know, go to the Color Me Mind store and paint some pottery and feel better or whatever, you know? And for me, I was trying to describe it as like, can you just will a headache away?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a cloud that doesn't leave even with the Tylenol sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always say if it were that easy just to kind of, you know, snap out of it, it's like, you know, I wouldn't have a job as a therapist because,
well,
we
don't want to do that to you, but
yeah, no, I would happily give up my job to get rid of depression. But cause it, yeah, it is so debilitating.
Well, there's a lot of promise in this area, with new treatments and things like that. Why don't we shift the conversation to what is going on when people are experiencing these types of things, I would say more severe anxiety, depression, what sort of resources are out there? So there's, you know, there's the professional resources. Yes. Why don't we start with that and how people are getting access to those when they don't have them, when they typically would say, I don't need anyone, I'm fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think fortunately, yeah, there are different kind of avenues to access these resources. I think, you know, one is to go through like a primary care doctor, or any other sort of, you know, physician. They could probably, you know, point you towards some referrals.
And how are, without a lot of in-person that was happening, and I know that we're praying things are going to start lifting here again soon, but like without that, how are people getting that treatment?
Mm-hmm. So it is, so it is mostly, you know, virtual, remote over video.
So they're doing telepsychology and psychiatry?
Yes, absolutely. And the good news is that actually even before the pandemic, we were doing this. I was seeing, you know, some of my clients over video. The field was kind of, you know, developing and actually with great promise that, you know, shown to be as helpful as in-person, you know, in-person therapy for most people. Obviously there are some people that, you know, maybe with more severe, mental health issues or, you know, their constraints, that in-person is better. But, yes, for most people, you know, virtual video does work and it's, you know, convenient. It, you know, takes away the barrier of, of, you know, of distance. And so it is more accessible that way, which is a.
So literally finding either getting a referral from your primary care or calling your insurance company.
Yes.
What resources out there. And then you, if you're under a PPO, if you have a PPO plan, you could reach out directly. If through an HMO, you'd probably get some sort of referral.
Yes.
Now, sorry to get so basic, everyone, but I think it's just really important to say, you know, these are steps to get help.
Yes, absolutely. And I think also, you know, more and more, or a lot of providers are out of network, not a network with any insurance company.
Right.
So, you know, I think going online and searching, luckily there are some good, you know, resources like Psychology Today. I think it's the most popular, you know, therapist database. I'm on there.
I had no idea.
Yes. So you can, and it's nice that you can search by, you know, your location, and also by, you know, specialty, kind of narrow down what you're looking for. So,
So, and for those that are not, maybe at the extreme, or they're not sure of the extreme of what's going on with them, but they know that something's wrong. They know that inside their heart aches or they're feeling lonely. I'm sure similar things are going on with children, a little bit of different, but what other resources are there out there? I've been seeing commercials with Michael Phelps and different resources out there that are connecting people.
Yes. These, these app-based therapy services. So I think BetterHelp and I know there's
it's called Talkspace.
Talkspace. That's it. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I think this is all great because I think it's just, just making it more accessible. And I think with the more app-based ones, I think it's even, fewer barriers. I think it's kind of, you can contact them whenever. And, I think it's also, I think it's good quality care that they're
able to get. And there's even an incredible chatbot. I say incredible. It's more for superficial. I'm using my own terms, by the way, superficial depression that maybe isn't at clinical level. That is, people are able to sort of have sort of a check-in, a daily check-in. I think it's called Woebot, Woebot. So there's kind of interesting things that people who are innovators are creating these solutions that maybe will help someone at different levels. So what are some of the symptoms that you're seeing the most of from people during this time?
Mm-hmm. So I think seeing a lot of that anhedonia that I mentioned of just like not really feeling getting much joy out of life, like feeling pretty kind of
apathetic,
bored, apathetic. Yes. Apathetic. It's like, just kind of, all right, this is getting old, not much to do here, can only watch so many Netflix shows in one's free time. And, just kind of, getting sick of the situation. Mm-hmm.
And what's sort of going on, like, especially women who, families got children and they're trying to still manage all of this. Are you finding that they're sort of coping differently or that they're just powering through or are they closing down?
I mean, I think all of the above, but I think, I think it's the ones that are kind of the closing down, the shutting down. That's a sign that that there does need to be, more of, intervention. Cause it's getting to be too much. I mean, we all only have so much capacity for stress as human beings and, going through this pandemic, it's kind of raising all of our baseline stress level is higher than it normally would be. So then you pile on regular stressors and then additional stressors. And it's really a recipe for overwhelm and that's shutting down.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's the worst. It's the worst because it just makes you I don't want to say not want to go on, but not want to go on in your day. And people around you can sort of feel it. What advice would you give to people that let's just start with anxiety? And anxiety for me has been sort of this heart palpitation, sometimes some shortness of breath, and things like that. Are there things that you advise your patients that help them in coping with these things?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Fortunately, we have a lot of, coping strategies and especially for anxiety. So, with the physical part of it, deep breathing is kind of a really quick and somewhat easy. It's always there, always accessible, our breathing. And so really trying to focus on, okay, can I just focus in on my breathing and trying to slow down my breathing, deepen my breath, and that that kind of signals to the brain, okay, calming down here, everything's okay. And then so hopefully, the rest of the body will follow suit, like the heart rate will start to slow down.
So almost trying to sort of stop it in its tracks and bring yourself back to your breath, which
yes.
What I think most people struggle with in meditation, but I think this practice is so important. Even in these moments, it doesn't have to be a sit down of, you know, cross legs and meditation, right?
No, not at all. Right. It can be standing in line at the grocery store or, you know, wherever, just kind of as needed. And I think, you know, just tuning into your breath and trying to, you know, focus on regulating your breath just throughout the day, you know, especially times, you know, not necessarily when you're feeling, you know, anxious or stressed, as just to almost kind of as a like preventative measure, just to, you know, if we're kind of feeling more regulated and taking that time to just kind of even just take a mental break from, you know, all the stress for, you know, things to do, we're always thinking about, that can really help it, you know, setting us up to better manage stress.
Hey there, it's Jill with a quick break from the conversation. Do you women feel like your body is starting to rebel and you're just aching to take back control again? For years, you've given so much to so many, and somehow parts of you just got lost in the mix. I know this because that's how it was for me. Well, it's time for you to make your comeback. You heard me right. That's why I wrote a 5-step blueprint for how to start living your best years from this day forward. It's called Wicked, Ageless, and Doing Epic Shit. And you can download your own free copy today by visiting wickedawesomeyou.com/ebook. And now let's get back to the show. Absolutely. So are there other things like, do you suggest, I mean, is workout important? Is raising your heart rate important throughout the day? What are things that I call them rituals. It's like what daily rituals. And I think the breathing is incredible anytime, anywhere. But what other things might you suggest?
Yeah, I think that word ritual is a good one, because I think it is like ritual, routine. You know, so it's, yeah, I mean, it's things like, right, if exercise is, you know, is something, I mean, we know that exercise has been shown to, you know, help with, you know, with depression and mood and, you know, stress and all that. So, you know, exercise, it could be, you know, yoga also, I think is a great form of exercise, because it also has the meditation component there, you know, or kind of mindfulness of our breath and our, you know, movement.
That's a good one. I sometimes forget about yoga.
Yeah. You know, also journaling, you know, just kind of writing, you know, taking some time to write things down.
Got it.
You know, anything that,
less caffeine.
Yeah. Right. Less caffeine can be helpful, or some herbal tea, or, I mean, diet, I think for sure is also a way to, you know, help with mental health, you know.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, really trying to eat, you know, I think regularly helps, you know, again, that routine, aspect, and eating foods that are kind of make you feel good, that are nourishing. And also, you know, I think I'm an advocate of kind of, you know, everything, most things in moderation. So also, you know, also listening to your body, you know, knowing when, okay, I feel like something sweet, or I feel like a treat, and allowing yourself to have that without guilt, but then also really trying to,
I think one of the things that came to mind while you were talking was the idea that, and I must say I'm guilty of it, is the idea that like the overeating to sort of stuff and take away some of the anxiety, or if you're experiencing sort of depression and pain, you know, in your heart and those sort of things. So that, that's been more difficult now, having this sort of like constantly surrounded, constantly at home, constantly surrounded by food. And
that's definitely something that I've seen more of, that more people are struggling with, with overeating, with kind of, you know, eating as a way of like Yeah, just to out of boredom or, you know, yeah, out of, you know, stress. So
if someone is, getting back to the depression mm-hmm. side a little bit, mm-hmm. When is it really important to seek help? Is it have to be at the time where you're, I mean, I guess the best example, the extreme example is, you know, thoughts of not wanting to live or contemplating suicide. That's the extreme.
Yes.
But when would someone really want to seek help, like professional help versus just, you know, my daily workout?
Well, I mean, I think, and I'm maybe biased here, but I think at the first sign, you know, like you said, like just like feeling like, you know what, I just don't feel like myself. Something doesn't feel right. I would recommend if possible, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, seeking a therapist right away, but just, you know, some sort of support, you know, whether it's talking to your doctor or,
there's a couple kinds of therapy from my experiences over the mm-hmm. years. And one of them was, well, they called it talk therapy. Maybe that's the way I thought about it. And where during the session, you're sort of self-discovering things. And then there was also people that advise things like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, that was helping mm-hmm. us cope. Are those sort of combined? How does that differ? And why are these tools and sort of sessions with a therapist recommended?
Yeah. So I think, they're all different kind of, therapeutic approaches. But mm-hmm. I think, nowadays what I practice is the more, like CBT, the therapies that are, a little more, I guess you'd say active, you know, in that
intervening,
mm-hmm. helping. I think that, you know, that process of, you know, helping, you know, fostering insight and, you know, self-discovery and self-understanding is important, but then also, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? Yeah. And so that's where the, these therapies, like CBT and, other more behavioral, you know, treatments really, help with, developing coping skills and figuring out what can I do to feel better, to function better, to kind of optimize my well-being.
Yeah. And I think that was my frustration over the years was I sometimes would go in and it would just be it's like I was talking to my girlfriend. And I was like, okay, I'm paying to talk to my girlfriend, which is great, but I can talk to my girlfriend for free. And I feel like this more sort of intervention, and it's not an intervention for alcohol, everyone. I'm just talking about an intervention and things that you're feeling, but coping mechanisms.
Yes.
And coping while is great, I do think there's also sort of thriving mechanisms, mm-hmm. things that mm-hmm. help you thrive and do better. You don't have to be in a dire state to be, you know, focusing on your mental health.
Absolutely. And I think we're moving more in the direction of, you know, recognizing that mental health care, you know, just, taking care of our mental health is really just, you know, fundamental, just like we, you know, take care of our physical health and get a yearly physical. We really need, it's important to be mindful of how is my mental health. And because they're also very, you know, interconnected, our, you know, physical and mental health. And
are you noticing that the stigma of even the word mental health, which everyone of course mm-hmm. equated with like, you know, some sort of like loony bin that they had to go to, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, what was the lobotomies and things like that?
Yeah.
Are you noticing that it's changing, that it's coming down? I mean, I've been talking about mm-hmm. openly for many years, but it's kind of new.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It is kind of new, and I think it is changing, and there's more just acceptance of we're all human, you know, we're all human. We all have stress, and, you know, and I think we have more stress than ever nowadays with more sources of stress. You know, I mean, just look at, you know, social media and adolescence, you know, how that alone is impacting, you know, mental health. Mm-hmm. So, and now we have a global pandemic. We've never had that before. So, yeah.
Let's just add it to the mix.
Yes.
For mothers that are, for mothers or fathers have kids, and this has been probably the most brutal on them. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure there are statistics around it. I don't have them in front of me, but that kids are having all kinds of issues, all types of things going on. And I can just give you a couple from my own son, who's six, who seems to be extremely happy in the home, but not happy out of the home, doesn't want to go outside, has become more sort of, let's just never leave the home, I'm so happy, to a germaphobe, total germaphobe, and sort of created lots of anxieties around it. And that's just my son. Like, I know, you know, I've spoken to other moms that have lots of other things.
Yes.
What advice can you give to moms that are questioning, you know, when your child needs help, and is it different than them going to seek their own help for themselves? Does that make sense?
Oh, but like the
resources, the process, and
You know, I think yes and no. I think to start out, no. I mean, not much. I would say probably not much different is the process. Okay. I mean, maybe, you know, it's obviously, I actually maybe think it can be a little harder to navigate with children.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I think it, you know, I was thinking, you know, the first step, like talking to the pediatrician and, but, you know, talking to the school, but I also am aware, you know, that especially with schools, different levels of resources and.
But I know the way that I have been handling this, although, you know, it's still in process of searching resources, is reaching out to the school. I reached out to his teacher, and there happens to be a school psychologist, social worker, pretty soon kindergarten, so we'd never met them in person yet. But we reached out there, who had great suggestions because his stuff could be solved with occupational therapy, some of these anxieties and sensory disorder stuff. So we reached out there. And I think you're right. I think your pediatrician should be your first line of contact. Some of the things that I have found, and younger kids are different, that there's, you know, books that I've been reading that they gave me resources, but I think professional help means shouldn't be stigmatized. It's actually should be thought of as just like a professional friend on the other end, helping them cope through all this stuff. Because do you find that like kids just don't share the same information with their parents that they may share with their psychologist?
Right. I think they don't have the, even the like ability, like the verbal or the, you know, ability to express exactly what's going on with them. And so I think, professionals are able to, they have their ways of assessing, you know.
Seeing through the muck.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's, we're as parents, right? We're not experts in everything. And so we're not, you know, taught how to, right? If our kid is struggling, we, you know, don't always know the best, you know, and way to help them. So yeah, getting that additional support and resources is
important. I think we'll definitely link to some resources that we discussed here today, because I think that you know, my goal is always connecting people with the resources and how can we get people to get there quicker without having to like struggle with finding things is really hard. And there's so much innovation out there going on that I feel like people can start, you know, start somewhere. And, I just, my thing through this whole thing is not to ignore what's in front of us and not push it down where it explodes too late.
I also think it's an opportunity, kind of the, I think, you know, the silver lining, which it's become a little bit of a cliche, but I think, you know, there are, we're trying to look for them and we are.
I love it. Yeah. Let's talk silver linings.
Yeah. You know, but I think, you know, sometimes exploring that and, you know, maybe seeking out that help and, you know, I think can lead to, just, you know, we kind of deeper, you know, deeper connections with, you know, with our, just with ourself and, you know, with our kids. And, yeah, so I think it's, there's some positive.
Yeah. Have you heard from some people how they've, how some of these silver linings have manifested, like some examples?
You know, not having to do the commute, obviously those, you know, or something like that. But, you know, I think some people, like, just the more family time actually has been a nice thing, you know, more time with, you know, working parents that work outside of the home, or, you know, time with kids. It's kind of the, you know, slower pace, kind of getting back in touch with, you know, what's important. Think, you know, really having more time and space to focus on self-care and like mental wellness.
Mental wellness should definitely be part of any self-care routine. If you think about self-care, it's absolutely, where your mind is at is probably the most important, right? So before we wrap up, what is one piece of advice that you would tell your 20-year-old self?
Don't worry so much about, about the future and how it's going to turn out. You know, it's, focus on, you know, one foot in front of the other and trying, you know, trying to do your best and,
Not always be concerned about the next step, just sort of living it, and that it'll all sort of fall into place.
Yeah. And try to connect as much with others, I would say, along the way that you can, you know, reach out to others for support, because you can't, you know, can't go it alone, or it's harder if you try to go it alone.
Absolutely. So how can people find you? Where can they find you on?
Yeah. So I actually have a website. It's, draerinjoyce.com, and that's draerinjoyce.com. Okay. So, and my, you know, email and phone number is there. So, you know, happy to, I offer, you know, consultations.
Excellent.
Yeah. To see.
And so you're doing a lot of virtual appointments right now.
I'm actually doing only virtual appointments. Okay. Yes. And like I said, I was doing it before the pandemic. So that was fortunate for me that it wasn't too big of an adjustment, but,
Well, I think it's so great. I love the idea of accessibility. I think that has been one of the biggest silver linings, has been the immediate shift to needing to be virtual, and how much more we can get done and how much more we can have access to when we're just at our homes. I suggest everyone find someone to help through this and even beyond. I mean, once we start getting back into things, there's going to be some adjustment period for sure. I went out for my first lunch the other day outside. I was like, I think it's been a year. Holy moly. Yeah. But I was one of the paranoid ones. So I cannot thank you enough, Dr. Joyce. This is, it's really an important discussion. I hope, you know, women, I know you're sort of leading your families, and if you're single, you're leading yourself, which is a lot of responsibility, to make sure that you take care of that lovely mind of yours. So, and body. So thank you so much for joining us today on Anti-Aging Uncensored.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Joyce, for joining me today. You've given us so much to consider, as well as valuable ways we can start to cope with the stress and anxiety we're feeling. I hope you listening today will find the information you need to guide you through in taking care of your own mental health. And ladies, if you know a friend who needs to hear what Dr. Joyce shared today, please share this episode with her. If you're looking for specific information mentioned in this podcast, you'll find our show notes on our podcast page. And if you liked what you heard today, tap into the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the incredible topics we have coming up. No doubt they'll help you discover the best ways to put yourself in control of your health, your wellness, your beauty, and more. I'm your host, Jill Gilbert, and I will see you next week right back here at Anti-Aging Uncensored. Have a crazy healthy week.